This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm Michael Levin. I'm a writer, publisher, and author publicist. Looking for a fun satirical read? My Cider and Ale Chronicles box set that I co-wrote with JMD Reed is now out. Today, we're joined by David Green, author of the Empire of Rune series. And welcome to the Authors in Focus podcast. Today we're here with David Green, author of the Empire of Rune series. How are you doing today, David?
I'm very good. How are you?
Doing all right. You know, it's getting cold in Canada, but that's as to be expected with Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't really complain. Just wrapping up lots of loose ends with work, and things are sort of slowly getting back to normal. I don't know how it is with you guys, but it's been a little crazy. It's like first there's high COVID numbers, then they're low, then they're high, then they're low. And nobody really knows whether to really kick back into gear or whether to keep things the way they are.
Yeah. We've not been too bad because there's only 5 million people that live in Ireland, so it's not too bad to kind of get everyone vaccinated, and we're already on giving people over 60 and healthcare workers boosting jabs. So basically, they're saying like in a few weeks, like, you know what, if you want it, you can just go and get it. And so the hospital numbers are quite low, so it's pretty much gone back to normal now. We're still wearing masks and everything everywhere we go, but that is normal now. We've been doing it for nearly 2 years now, so it's kind of it feels weird not to wear one when you go in somewhere, you know.
I know. It's become like almost like wearing underwear these days. I walked into a library with my kids one day, and but we weren't wearing them. It was just, it slipped our mind. And when we realized we weren't wearing them, we like covered our faces, like all at the same time. And it felt really weird. It's like you feel that extra new article of clothing that you don't have anymore. Not being there. But anyway, it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's been rough for some people. I've enjoyed the much more family time and time with nature. A little bit of a break from the fast pace of life, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like I say, it's different for everyone else. And like, I've been pretty lucky that my immediate family and other people haven't really been, we've not had anyone really affected badly. Well, I know a few people that have caught it, but they've all recovered okay. So it's, and obviously then personally, like with my kind of like with my writing everything, like I only really started writing when the pandemic started, so it's been, you know, okay for me really, like in general. It was kind of weird actually when it started going back to normal a little bit for us in the summer, because I kind of work quite hard and quite regularly need a lot of structure, and because everything started going back to normal and you start getting people kind of ringing you up saying, do you want to go out for a drink tonight? Or do you want to go and do this? Do you want to go and do that? And you're kind of like, yeah, I would like to go and do that. I just found like my productivity just tailed off completely for a couple of months. And it really kind of took me a few weeks to get back into the swing of things again.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So it's anybody's guess how the rest of the year will go, but, so before we get into the main crux of the interview, I always like to start these interviews off with a couple of fun questions, a little bit off topic. So the first one, if you could have a drink with any author, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Okay. That one's, Robert Jordan would be the one, because I'm a huge Wheel of Time fan, which is quite topical at the minute, seeing as the TV show's out in 9 days. Not that I can count in or anything, but I am counting. I have a countdown on my laptop, which has like been going on for the last since the release date was announced. It's been kind of ticking down from that, because I am such a nerd when it comes to Wheel of Time. So yeah, I would love to have a drink with Robert Jordan. I'd love to have one. And I would just pepper his mind with every single question that I could think of about not only like stuff that like happened or like, because I know obviously Brandon Sanderson finished his books off and it went on those quite extensive notes and what have you. And apart from a few characters, he kind of had like an ending sketched out for him. So it ended pretty much how he wanted it to end. But I'd love to know like the process of it and the other things that he actually left deliberately unwrapped up, like the infamous Nakomi character. I would love to just pester him about that. And other things as well, because he was kind of halfway between a plotter and a pantser, apparently. So there was a lot of things where he changed his mind, like where he set things up and then changed his mind. And I'd love to ask him like why he did some of those things as well. I'd just basically just be a massive jerk to him for as long as he would sit there drinking.
Right. Yeah. No, I can't say I'm a huge fan, but I also can't say that I'm not. I've read a few of the books and I really did enjoy them. I've kind of always been daunted by how massive the series is, and how long the books get. And, I found just because of time, I tend to, back away from, even though I like to have big, so I own all the Wheel of Time books, but I haven't read them. I own the entire Malazan Book of the Fallen series, but I've only read up to Memories of Ice. You know, yeah. And I've loved them. It's just like, you get any further and you're like really deep into this and like, okay, when am I going to do this? When am I going to have time to read, spend time with my family, get my work done and all of that? I am excited. I'm excited to watch the show. I definitely will. I know there's been some interesting thoughts about it. I think all of that is editing. Like the fact that they're not really showing Randall Thor, and Matt Cothon as, you know, integral characters. To me, that's like, you know, Ghostbusters Afterlife, the previews not showing the original cast.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I actually do a Wheel of Time podcast about where talking through from like a writer's perspective, talking through like choices. And man, Wheel of Time could really take over this whole interview now if I'm not careful. but like, you know, the first book, Eye of the World, like it kind of sets up a mystery of who is the Dragon Reborn, but then there's no mystery whatsoever. Like, Robert Jordan doesn't have any interest in kind of following up on it. As soon as you start reading it, you're kind of like, well, it's this guy. So obviously with a TV show, it makes more sense to kind of hide that a little bit, just to kind of keep that mystery for, because, you know, it's like Game of Thrones. Like, you know, people think that, well, it's the popular books and Wheel of Time are popular books, but, you know, they want people that have never read these books to watch the show as well. You know, more people haven't read the books to watch it, so this kind of mystery is for them, and it makes for good television. So yeah, I'm all for it, and I'm with you on the Malazan ones. I've read the main 10, but the thing with the Malazan books is it's not really 10 books, because you have to read all the spin-offs as well, which are like, they're not really spin-offs, because it's like there's some books where it's like characters get killed off or do things in the spin-offs, and then like the main series like kind of references them. And in the UK, one of the spin-offs that you had to read came out after one of the main sequence books, but all the events took place before it. So everyone who got it in the UK was reading it, and this character was like dead, basically. And everyone was like, when did this happen? And then this like spin-off came out, was like, oh, okay, well, we need to read this too. So when you see that it's 10 books, it's really about 20 or something, I think, at this point.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So I've read my co-writer's books, James Reed's books. He's got, a series of five, the whole series is about 1 million words. Uh-huh. And, I've made it to book number 3, and I'm actually really impressed that I was able to do that. anyway, okay. So one more question. What is something, I hate to use the word guilty pleasure, because I don't really believe there's like anything that you should like that you would feel guilty of, but what is like one thing that you kind of turn to that, you think people would kind of judge you for if they knew that you were into it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of like with a guilty pleasure as well. It's kind of like, oh, I just embrace it, whatever. But, and there is probably some things that I'd be like a bit embarrassed to say. Let me think. What do I like to do? I really like rewatching really kind of inoffensive, middle of the road TV shows that like I don't even particularly enjoy. But I have no feelings about them one way or the other, and I just kind of like find like a real comfort in watching them. So at the moment, my reward for I know this show has its fans, but as a reward for when I finish my writing for the evening, I watch a couple of episodes of Once Upon a Time on Disney Plus, and that is my. That is my well done to hitting your writing goals today. Go and write this show that you don't, or watch this show that you don't particularly like, but it's fine, and that's just that's perfectly okay. It's like a little like it's like a blanket that's kind of worn through a little bit, but I've worn it before. Oh, yeah, you know.
Did you say Once Upon a Time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've my wife and I watched it semi regularly when it first came out. We thought it was kind of cool. Visually it was really cool, and they did some really cool things. So I watched it
years ago when it came onto Netflix, and it was already, I think it was up to like season 5 or something at the point. I'd never seen it. So I kind of watched it all until the point where new episodes were coming out each week, and I just stopped watching it at that point. I think it was like halfway through season 5 or something, and then I was like, you know what, I'll go back to that one day and finish it. But me being me, I have to go back to the start. So I'm kind of coming up to the point where I stop watching it now. But yeah, that's basically, if anyone ever picks up any, like I'm working on Path of War at the moment, which is a sequel to Sword, Jude, Shadow. So in the future, if anyone picks up that book and they're reading it, you can just picture that when I finished writing a bit of that book, I went to watch a couple of episodes of Once Upon a Time immediately afterwards.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Which brings me to the first real question, getting to your own work. When did you know you wanted to be a writer? And when did you kind of realize you had that writing bug that was strong enough that you wanted to actually try to write novels? And what kind of influenced that decision to go full throttle into it?
So I've always been a huge reader. Reading is always kind of, I'm into film and TV and stuff and video games, but reading was always the thing to do. Like anywhere that I used to go, I'd have a couple of books with me in my bag, to read if I was like on a bus or a train or if I was just waiting for someone or something like that, you know, back in the days before mobile phones and all that kind of stuff. So it was always something that I kind of had like an ambition to do, but it was one of those things as well where I was always making excuses to not do it. So I was like, you know what, once I'm like 25, I'll do this. And then once I'm 30, I'll do this. And then I was like, well, once I've done this, I'll start doing it. And it was one of those things, I just kept on putting it off all the time and just not really having the confidence to do it. And then a couple of things kind of happened, like my son was born. And I've been working in upper retail management for years since I finished university, and it was like it's one of those things where it's like any time that I kind of got like fed up in one of the roles that I was doing, I was always like, I could either go and do something else completely different, or I could just go and get another similar job doing what I'm doing, which is easier, which is what I inevitably did. But then so my son was born, and and my wife decided that I would, instead of going into childcare and stuff like that, that I would stay at home and look after him after my wife went back to work. And so I started doing that, and it was great, and I loved doing it. But then I was kind of like, you know what, I've got time to do something else now. If I don't do this writing thing, then I'm never going to do it. So I just signed up to do like a one creative writing course, in Galway City, which is the closest city that I live to. It was all just kind of like, you know, just exercises, like writing prompts and this kind of thing. And one of the writing prompts just kind of knocked something loose in my head about like this idea that I kind of had for a long time. It wasn't fantasy or anything. It was it's a crime novel. And I just had this idea for a long time. I was obsessed with it. I don't know if you've ever heard of Shaman Tud, this unsolved crime in Australia from the 1940s. I was always kind of like intrigued by it. I kind of was like, this writing prompt kind of linked to it. And I was like, you know what if I did my own kind of version of that and tried to tell my own story about what actually happened? So I just started writing this once a week for these creative writing classes. And as the pandemic started, I finished the last chapter of it. And then I was like, well, what next? What should I do now with this thing? And so I just started kind of like looking around to submit shorter work, because I was like, you know, I want to keep writing. I don't want to just finish this book and just not do anything. And then I kind of started moving more towards fantasy, which was like kind of my passion. And the kind of really thing that kind of drove it all was that I wanted to have something for my son to see when he's older, that like what has his dad done, like, you know, in his life. You know, and like, well, here's like, I did this. You may not like them, but these are the things. Here's what I've done. Like, you know, because up until that point, I didn't really have anything, you know, because of my job and all that kind of stuff that I did. Like, it was all, I'd moved countries a couple of times when I was younger. So a lot of the stuff that I kind of had, I've been kind of lost in transit or had to be left behind and whatever. So I was kind of like, you know what? I'd like to have something, even if it's one thing in print that I can show him. But, yeah, so that was the drive for that, really.
Yeah, no, I hear that. With my writing, I mean, I started writing. I mean, I've always written, but I kind of started thinking about novels a couple of years ago. And obviously, the first series that James and I put out, and the reason I came to James is because I was having a hard time with the choreography of the fighting. I was doing okay with the characters. I was doing okay with the humor. And the, you know, that side of it, but I mm-hmm. couldn't choreograph a battle to save my life, let alone one with, seals and walruses. So, James had written really cool stuff, aerial battles and stuff in his series. And I approached him and he me from that. And that's how we ended up with a full series, is we had fun with it and we just kept going. But, I knew that, my kids knew I wrote, but they knew that they also knew they would never be able to read these books, at least not until they were, you know, teenagers, because of the language and the content. So, Max and the Captain, which is the series I'm putting out in the spring, is basically, kind of a love letter to both my kids, but, specifically my son, because I told him the story as a bedtime story for about 6 months. And I knew that, that it would be something, because he inspired the main character, so I knew it would be something that he'd have and he'd be able to appreciate. And he's actually started writing now. He's only 7 years old, but he's writing his own little versions of books, and it's something that I'm really proud of.
So that's amazing. Yeah, that's really good.
It's cool. It's definitely, having kids will definitely change your outlook and your whole focus, and you'll really want to, you know, be that person, that everything to them. So I definitely understand that. That's really cool. Give us a little background, our community, on Empire of Ruin, specifically In Solitude Shadow being book one. And, you know, just give us the gist of the series and let everybody know why it should be next on their list to purchase and download.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So it's funny because it kind of goes into what we were talking about before, about huge kind of sprawling epics. So I'm a fan of those, and but I know that a lot of people kind of struggle with them, or they get daunted by a page size. So this is the first of a dark fantasy epic series, but it's not got the epic page count, and it was designed on purpose that way. So it's kind of like you know, it's still a big book. You know, it's just shy of 100,000 words, but it's not, you know, it's not like something that's going to break your coffee table or anything like that. And what it is, it's just basically like from my like years of reading fantasy, from like starting from like Arthurian legends when I was a little kid to Lord of the Rings to Joe Abercrombie and then indie writing and everything, it's kind of my love letter to fantasy. It's stuff that I've always enjoyed, and it's things that I've kind of always wanted to see in fantasy as well. And it kind of really explores, you know, it's very, very character driven. So it's multi POV, and it's about like there's a big kind of epic backdrop that's going on with this in this empire of ruin that's called Houtbelt. And there's huge stakes, but at the centre of it is a very, very personal story between mothers and daughters and father and sons. And particularly the mother and daughter focus is something that people have responded really, really well to. Because a lot of time you don't really see it in fantasy. A lot of the times it is there, but it's, a lot of time people have daddy issues, or it's like a father and son relationship, which there is that character, those characters in this book, but the main focus is between this mother and daughter who are estranged over something that I worked really, really hard on to kind of make people, there is no right or wrong answer as to why they're estranged. You know what I mean? Some people will agree with the daughter and some people will agree with the mother, and quite vehemently as well. Like, I've had people write to me saying, like, you know, like, this person, why can't you just see what she's done for her and this kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. And it's which is great, which is the kind of reaction that I was getting. And people sometimes ask me, like, what side do you come down on? And it's like, well, you know, I couldn't really say. I understand both point of views, but as a parent, I think I come down on the mother's side a little bit. But it's, you know, it's dark, but it's fun as well. There's like a good adventure in it, and there's good bits of humour. And one of the reviews that I got for it very early on, which was by AM Justice, said that it was like grimdark with hope, which I thought was quite a good description of it, because it is dark. It is a dark fantasy world. It deals with like genocide and slavery and xenophobia and other things like this, because obviously it was written in 2020 when, you know, we had all these different elections going on. We had Brexit going on. We had lockdowns all the time, which is, you know, the name Solitude comes from. It was written in solitude, and it's about people that are very, very confined in a very solitary kind of life. So it had all this other stuff, all this dark stuff going on, but then there is this overriding feeling of hope in it. And it's just the characters are people that I love going back to writing. I mean, I'm writing the sequel at the moment, and I just love going back and writing them and putting them through terrible, terrible, terrible trials that some of them may not get through.
Yeah. No, I mean, first of all, it's a really good, it's a great accolade that you got that review from AM Justice, because she's a great writer. I actually read her first book and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And also getting back to the whole mothers and daughters, different roles and parental thing. I actually just had this conversation with somebody else that I interviewed recently about how perspectives shift as you experience and put yourself in different roles. There are books that I've read multiple times that clearly I was, you know, I read it from the perspective of the younger character. Mm-hmm. And now I can go back and read the exact same book and have a completely different perspective as a parent.
Yeah.
So, it's cool that you're getting that kind of different dichotomy, and that you're kind of able to see it from both sides, from different roles. What has been your favorite part of this whole experience? Because it's obviously, you know, there's a lot to self-publishing, and there's a lot of things you have to think about, and a lot of kind of tasks to make the process work. And it's not just about the writing. The writing is only, you know, kind of a very small part of it. So what's been your favorite thing since you've started doing this that you can kind of look at with the most fondness, and what has just kind of driven you insane?
Favorite thing, I mean, getting that first book actually in your hands is hard to beat, isn't it?
Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
One when it comes, like, you know, you get your Alpha copies and they come in the box and you open them up and, you know, my son was with me as well when they came, so that was great because he was very excited about opening too. Like, he was only three, but he kind of knew that he was like, they were like, oh, it's daddy's books, and he kind of he lost interest a little while afterwards, but it was still a great moment. But just seeing that people have enjoyed what you've created is fantastic as well, because that's, I mean, you write these things for yourself to an extent. It's, you know, you want it to be something that you would enjoy reading, but you do want other people to respond to it. And you know, if you release something and that no one reads, or a few people read it and just kind of shrug and say, eh, you know, that's fine. That's not what you want. You either want someone who really loves it or really hates it, because at least then it's stimulated something out of them. And thankfully for me, with Entirely Shadow, like, it's been so far, it's been overwhelmingly positive, the response. I've had like maybe one or two bad reviews, and like one of them I actually wanted to print off and use for like promotion terms, but Amazon deleted it because it was a guy who was not very impressed that there was female characters front and center in it. And it's like, well, you know, there is a woman on the front cover, so I'm not sure what he was expecting, but he was like, he had some very choice words for me, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna use those. But Amazon deletes them, unfortunately. So that's good. It's great when people kind of email me through like my newsletter or whatever, and they kind of talk about the book or they've recommended it to people. That's always brilliant to hear. Driving insane. I think I was kind of insane in the first place. I think most writers are a little bit insane, because, like, you know, it's like these things that come out of the heads, these just hundreds of thousands of words a month that come out of the heads are just pure, just like, where is this coming from? So there must be some craziness there at the start, but I think just trying to kind of break into people's minds is the thing where it's like, you know, because, and this is where, like, you know, you come in and you're so helpful for people and giving people a platform and everything, is that it's there's so many people trying to get the books out there, you know, the names out there, and it's you can sometimes, it's like you're part, you're like a droplet of water in a wave crashing against a cliff, you know.
Yeah, we indie authors multiply like gremlins that are fed up with midnight. It's truly unbelievable. And I'm with you. I could talk about my books all day long. And there's nothing better than finding out, like yesterday I got a review of my newest one by somebody that, you know, she had been alpha reading for me, so she's read everything I've done, but it was just so cool to see the review and to see the book cover and somebody else's words, and to sometimes get messages, hey, I'm reading Dirk right now and I don't understand why his dad's so mad at him, and I'm just like, don't worry, it'll be explained, it's going to be there, just, you know, keep reading. But I love the enthusiasm, and I love when people actually have something to say. And I know that, you know, even if 20 people are getting something out of what I've done, it'll elevate my mood. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Definitely.
So let's talk about, I mean, you mentioned Robert Jordan and Wheel of Time, and we talked a little bit about Malazan. What are some of the other kind of big influences, not just from books, but also from other media sources? You know, anything from TV, movies, video games. I know are a huge one on so many fantasy authors these days, that have kind of helped lay the foundation for what you've been creating.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so like in terms of books, like, you know, obviously Tolkien was like the first kind of real touchstone. After Arthurian Legends and Robin Hood actually were the first two, because I grew up in England in the 80s, and I grew up in the northwest of England, which is like the Manchester area, so it's where it just kind of touches Wales, and there's a lot of Celtic influence there, and a lot of like Arthurian legend there as well, and Sherwood Forest isn't too far away, so it's a great kind of place to grow up, especially if you're interested in all that kind of stuff. And then obviously Tolkien with The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, and then The Silmarillion, which I really enjoy as a different kind of piece of work. It's not really a story. It's kind of like a mythic, like encyclopedia, I suppose, or a history or something. And then I always remember picking up, and it's not an author that I kind of enjoy very much anymore, but Raymond E. Feist's Magician. I remember getting that when I was a teenager. I was 15 or 16, and just like Magician just blew me away. Like, I just thought, this is just unbelievable. Like, it was just so sprawling, and it was like, you know, just going into different realms and realities and all this kind of stuff. And like, it was just, yeah. And I enjoyed that series, that trilogy, but like Magician is always something that I'd always say to people, like, just read it just to see like how far someone's imagination can go for, like, you know, a first book in a series. And then after that, like, yeah, I was at the right age for video games. So yeah, I was born in 83. So I was, I had like an Atari, SNES, or NES actually, a SNES, then Master System, Mega Drive, right up into like Xbox Series X and all that kind of stuff. So I've been a gamer all of my life. And in terms of In Solitude Shadow and Dragon Age, the BioWare games were particularly the first one. Actually, no, the first two, actually. And I do like Inquisition a lot, but the first two, even though the second one has its like critics, they were quite kind of big influences on In Solitude Shadow. Just in terms of like the xenophobia between the races that's in it, which I found really, really interesting. It kind of took a fantasy world that has all these different kind of races, and you usually see it in like, say, Lord of the Rings, like, you know, the dwarves mistrust the elves a little bit, but like, you know, they're all on the same side and they're all up against Sauron and the orcs and what have you. Whereas the Dragon Age games, it was like, there was real deep-seated like hatred between certain races, and they really kind of put this real-world spin on it, where you have this like just inherent distrust of a race that's different to yours. And I just found that really, really interesting. So that was something that really kind of influenced In Solitude Shadow and the Banner Saga games as well, which I think are fantastic. And it's actually, I think they were a spin-off. People that worked on the Dragon Age games went off and set up their own studio and made the Banner Saga games. And they're very kind of, I don't know if you've played them, but they're very narrative driven. And they're,
you know,
really...
what? I'm not a gamer. But I've probably, being in this field for the last few years and having so many author friends, fantasy author friends and sci-fi author friends, it's made me, first of all, I always tell everybody, when it comes to like tabletop gaming and stuff like that, which so many people that I work with have done, mm-hmm. and I've been invited to join so many campaigns over the years, I always say, you don't want me on your campaign. It'll be like that last guy that's picked for volleyball at gym, you know what I mean? Because I'll just kill it for you, because I'll have no idea what's actually happening. And video games, I mean, I've recently, what do they call them? Big sandbox games, you know, like the games kind of like, you know, Witcher and,
World games.
Assassin's Creed. Yeah, like those open world games. I just get frustrated. Like, for me, gaming is you walk straight, you jump, you shoot something, and then you fight a boss at the end. And you go on to the next level, and the more levels you have, the better. I always end up like my son likes all those games, like you like the Blockcraft, and I sound old when I'm like my son like the Blockcraft and the Minecraft and whatever. Yeah. I'm not that old, dude, but I sound like I'm aging myself. But he plays those games, and I've tried Minecraft. I even have it on my phone, and literally I just walk straight, and then I bump into a horse, and then I'm like, okay, what do I do? I get on the horse, and then what do? I walk straight, then I end up getting stuck in a corner, and I try to get out for like 2 hours, and I can't, and I have to call my 7-year-old and say, buddy, can you help me out of this corner? And he does it in like 5 seconds. So I haven't really, so if you ask me about games, I'm intrigued. I really am, and I really want to, I want to get into them, and I want to feel a part of it, because I know it's such a huge part of the culture that I'm involved in, but I just haven't been able to do it yet.
Yeah, you know what? If you ever do get the wanting to check out, I would check out Banner Saga because it's like a choose your own adventure game.
I've heard about it. I've heard it's really good.
So you're not really controlling anything. So there's not like any of that kind of stuff. You're just basically like you're choosing what happens next in the story, and it's like invariably bad things happen no matter what choice you make. But it's like, what is the worst choice you could possibly make in this situation? So it's like a scale of like pretty bad to extremely bad, right? But yeah, that was I love those games, man, and that was a big influence on In Solitude Shadow, which was I should really go back and read those. I really like them.
Awesome. And by the way, speaking of Raymond Feist, you can still hear me, right?
I can, yeah.
Okay, cool. Speaking of Raymond Feist, I am a fan. I've read Magician and a few of the books after that, and I actually got a chance to interview Ray twice, which was really probably one of my big, like, if I think about the big interviews that I've done, his was probably one of my favorites. He's a really good dude. Like, he's really funny and like an affable guy, and he's very knowledgeable about the whole industry, and he's got lots of really cool stories about being there kind of at the sort of the inception of, like, you know, American fantasy novels. When it became, I mean, obviously there's the great founders, you know what I mean? But he's pretty close to being one of them.
Magician would have been late 70s, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think 1978 or 1979. And he was definitely, you know, a trendsetter that has continued to write and, you know, has put out a lot of good stuff. So it's cool that you had that as an influence.
That's amazing that you interviewed him. Well, yeah, Magician is just like, I just have so many fond memories of that book. It's just, it's one of those things where, like, I was talking to someone the other day, I don't read blurbs on books. I just kind of like, I look at a cover and I think, like, you know, I've got a feeling, I'll go for it. I don't ever want to, I like to go into it not knowing what to expect. Magician was one of those books where it was like, I had no idea where it would end up. You know, when it was going on, it was kept on just getting bigger and bigger and bigger as the book went on. Like, it was, it's a brilliant book.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm an aesthetic guy too. I don't generally look at the blurbs. Your covers are really sweet, by the way. Definitely enticed me to want to check out your books. So if we're talking covers, they're awesome. So
thank you.
Your cover designer.
Rainbow Design that they're called. Both of them by the same, because I have the other series and they're both by the same person, but, she's written them for Path of War, the sequel to Solitude Shadow. She's done a really, really good job on that one. I'm really excited to see that one in the flesh when it comes out.
Yeah, for sure. So, David, what's next for you? I know that you've got another book coming out shortly, but fast forward, I don't know, the next year to year and a half, what are your plans to... in terms of, you know, releases, output, that kind of thing?
It's going to be quite a busy time. So I have two fantasy series that are going on at the minute. So obviously I have Empire of Ruin, and then I have my urban fantasy noir series, which is the Helen Haven, Nick Holleran ones, which is going to be a 5-book series in that one. So I've got a few of those to come out. I'll probably one or two next year. It's going to be at least one, maybe two. We'll have to see how it goes, but... within a year and a half, I'll be looking to have that series finished, and obviously the Empire of Ruin series will be finished within that time as well. We've got Path of War is out next in June, and then I kind of want to get the third one out pretty quickly afterwards, and aiming for a September release for the third one to kind of tie that off, because there's other things that I want to do. Like, I've got another series in mind that is going to kind of be linked to the Empire. It's going to be like a sequel series to the Empire of Ruin ones. So I'm kind of just doing like very, very basic kind of outlining on those now. But yeah, I just want to keep on going, you know, like it's a lot of what I've realized is a lot of this game is stuff out, keep your name out there, keep your work going, keep bringing books out, which is good because I enjoy writing them. So I've got loads of ideas for other things. So yes, yeah, so that's my main focus, is to finish off these two series that I've got, so I can move on to the next ones. But I'm kind of sad about it at the same time, because the Nick Halloran ones, which is something that I really, really enjoy writing, that is going to be a definitive ending. There's not going to be anything else after that fifth one. Not to say what's going to happen to the characters or anything like that, but like it's a very kind of definitive ending to the story. So like once that one's done, I'll be kind of like, well, that's him finished, and I'll ever go back to him ever again, which is a shame really. But you know, I've got other ideas as well for other things.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've kind of definitively ended my Cider and Ale series, but all the stuff, everything we put out exists in the same world, even when they seem like they're standalones and when they seem like they're different series. We always throw Easter eggs in to keep the world alive, because yeah, somehow I feel like if I'm keeping the world alive, if I can still throw in a Cider and Ale character, even if it's just like reader service for people that have read the books, I'm still kind of keeping it alive a little bit for the possibility of coming back to it, like, I don't know, months later to do something different.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it sounds like you've got a really action packed year. And I know it all sounds amazing. And, obviously, looking forward to hearing and seeing more and, you know, absolute best of luck with everything that you put out. I do have one more question that I like to ask everyone that comes on the show. All interview formats that I ever do, I end with this question, because I just think it's so important. Because as a writer, even after a very short time, it is an experience. And there's, like I said, so many ups and downs and high points and low points. And it's a nerve-wracking thing to bring your art to the world, and, you know, A, to be able to fully embrace what you're putting out yourself. For me, I know I do like, you know, 6 or 7 drafts of my stuff before I feel comfortable even releasing it. So if you could give new and aspiring writers one piece of advice, the most important and valuable piece of advice you've picked up since you started your writing career, what would that be?
Geez, it's like this. It's a good question. There's two. I'm going to cheat and actually just say two, but one of them is going to be very brief. Like the first one is just to actually start writing the thing, like, and don't do what I did and make excuses for years about, but I'll write it another time, because no one's ever going to read your stuff and you're never going to do anything if you don't sit down and actually start writing it. So that'd be the first thing. The main bit of advice would be, don't be afraid to show it to like a beta reader or an alpha reader or anything like that, because that is it's daunting, especially if you've never done it before, to like say show someone this thing that you've created and say, tell me what you think about this, is this, you know, where can it be better or whatever, because you never know what they're going to say. But if you want to make it at this, like, people are going to have to look at your stuff at some point or the other. Like, you know, if you never show it to anyone and you just release it, self-publish it onto Amazon, people are going to read it at that point, you know. So to get the very, very best out of your writing and to kind of learn and kind of hone your craft and to improve is just to kind of get one or two beta readers that you really trust, that you kind of they're going to help you create the best story that you can and improve as a writer. And that is really, really key, because and just thicken your skin a little, just practice on it, because sometimes there'll be bits that you really love and it just doesn't work. And it's hard for you to see that as a writer sometimes, because like, you know exactly why you've put a certain section in, or you've done something and it might mean something to you or whatever. But then if you have readers that are like, listen, I just don't get this bit, or it just doesn't work, then you have to really kind of take that on board and realize it's not personal, and it's just people wanting to get the best book for you. And so that'd be my main piece of advice, is beta readers that you trust.
Right, absolutely. Always very important, and sometimes a little scary, and you know, you have to have a thick skin, for sure, and be able to roll with it, and you know, feel confident asserting yourself with things too. Like, no, you know what? Just because you're beta reading, or just because you've been there, I might not necessarily agree with everything you say, and some things I'm going to want to keep. But you know, keeping an open mind enough to really be able to delve into why the issues are there, is really important. And to never, you know, get it's with art, with any artist. I mean, I come from 20 years of being a musician before I started writing. So songwriting, any art, there's a level of ego involved in creativity. Otherwise, you know, we probably wouldn't be artists and wouldn't be putting it out for the world to see, right?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of being able to find that fine balance between where the ego goes and where the rational, okay, well, I've employed you to do this because I trust you and I value your opinion. So what's that balance? What do I keep? What do I use? And so on. So, yeah, I think that's really excellent advice that everybody that sets out on this weird, crazy journey should definitely take to heart before they put out a book into the world. David, I've really enjoyed talking to you. Where can readers go to find out more about you?
Yeah, I've enjoyed talking to you too. Thanks for having me on. The best place really to go is my website. It's davidgreenwriter.com, and it has all of my links on there for social media, so Facebook, YouTube as well. I have a YouTube channel, Twitter, and also my newsletter sign up is on there as well. And if you sign up to my newsletter, you obviously keep up to date with all my goings on, but you also get a free short story fantasy collection for signing up. And the book is called Tales of Fire and Shadow. It's got about 16 stories in it, so it's not bad for free.
Nice. Excellent. Well, David, it's been an absolute pleasure. Wishing you all the best on your current releases, on your future releases, and all your writing endeavors. Have a great one.
You too. Thanks very much.
Take care.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my satirical fantasy novels on Amazon. Need help finding readers? Connect with me on Facebook in the Fantasy Sci-Fi Focus group or at authorsinfocus@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at fantasy-focus.com and where your favorite podcasts are hosted.